Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. World's changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. And the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. Won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we can do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time.
Good evening, family.
Peace.
Assalamu alaikum. What's up? Hotep. How's the family? This is Brother Rudolph Muhammad, and I am joined, as usual, by my lovely co-host, Sister Lachelle Muhammad from the Big D. And of course, you know the network we're on. We're in the Queendom, and we're doing what we do, trying to inform you, because together we are trying to save lives in the family. So let's just start this out the right way by giving all praise, honor, and thanks to the Almighty, All-Wise Creator. And that's for appearing to us in the person of Master Farag Muhammad and thanking him for raising one from amongst us to show us that even in the condition that we are in, there's hope for us and we can be saved, because he took one from among us, elevated him, and raised him to a state and a stature where that one has been able to raise all of us that never had an intercession with Master Farad Muhammad. And then he taught and trained one, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who has gone the length and breadth of this world, not this country, this world, making these teachings known, elevating the consciousness of individuals and giving the truth of the time and what must be done. And so because of those three, you and I have an opportunity for life more abundantly. So we thank them, of course. I'll thank them personally. And we're going to endeavor in this next 2 hours to do what they have spared our lives to do, which is to enrich you, educate you, inspire you, and help save your life. So with that, I say, assalamu alaikum to the family.
Wa alaikum salam, sir.
All right. So, co-host, I know you're on the time, Smith, so I'm going to let you go ahead and do what you got to do first, and then I'll take over from there.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam.
Okay. All praises due to Allah. Thank you, Sister Queen, and thank you, of course, my wonderful co-host, my partner, Brother Rudolph T. Muhammad. I was going through the notes and the information that you and I had discussed, Brother Rudolph, and looking at some of our local and timely disasters, you know, the very timely, shocking mudslides in the state of Washington, and just watching people suffer. They're still trying to find people. You know, we have across the world looking for a missing plane, and they're looking for missing people, and they said that the dogs that have been looking for the people are so exhausted that they have to give the dogs the day off, so that the search dogs, so that they can rest, because the work that the dogs are doing is so exhausting that they needed a break. So just watching things unfold, it made me think of the show we had done with Brother William, and he was talking about the flooding. And when we, you know, as you had mentioned to me so appropriately, Brother Rudolph, that we keep saying we want the snow to melt, but we don't think about the ramifications of the melting of the slow snow. You know, we say we're tired of snow, we want spring. Well, there's a price to pay for getting rid of the snow, and we see that playing out in the state of Washington with these mudslides. It's very dangerous, and I mean, they just don't know how bad it's going to get before it gets better. Then we look at the earthquake that just took place. You know, every time you think that you're listening to the shows for infotainment, you better be listening to it for the information to save yourself and your family. I mean, the timing couldn't be better for a disaster preparedness show, for a healthcare show, for an emergency preparedness show, for
that's
a survival
right.
show, when every day you're looking at people that say, I didn't expect this. I mean, I didn't know what to do. You know, we can't find mom. We can't find dad. We can't find our children. And if you had just did a little planning, just a little preparation, perhaps you could have saved yourself and your family. So I did post a couple of pictures on the Disaster Preparedness Facebook page. So if you can get to that page that our beautiful Sister Queen set up for us, you can get to that page. You can see a couple of the mudslide pictures that I posted. And I posted between the mudslide picture and the picture with the earthquake, a picture of Brother Rudolph teaching disaster preparedness, because he is his teaching and training that is, of course, based in the teaching and training of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Minister Louis Farrakhan, the fall of America, and Message to the Black Man, all of that. What we've been taught is what will stand between you and finding your missing loved one, what will stand between you and being somewhere and not having enough water, not being prepared. Don't keep thinking that Allah is not fair and that he'll let these things happen everywhere else, but they'll never touch you. It doesn't work that way. Your turn is coming to be the one that someone else watches on the news and says, wow, How prepared will you be when your turn comes, when your turn comes, for you to protect yourself and your family? So with that as our base tonight, take this show very seriously, because you'll never know when it's going to be at your door, and the show's going to be playing out in your life, and you'll be trying to remember what Brother Rudolph taught. So don't listen to the show like a voyeur. I want you to prepare yourself. Go out and get one item that he talks about. Go out and learn one skill that he suggests every time you hear the show. So at least that's one more tool in your toolbox. So I just wanted to say that tonight, Brother Rudolph, and I'll let you take it on further. But, I mean, make sure you go back and listen to these shows. They're archived. You can go back and listen and learn and pick up the cues that the brother is dishing out for free. I mean, these are seminars that people spend big money to go to, and you're getting them for free. So don't take it for granted. For some reason, Allah is blessing you with this information, and don't not take the blessing, and you'll be like the people of Noah when they laughed when he was building the boat. And then when the water came, they all like, Noah, not a man now. First he was the crazy guy. Now he that deal when the water comes. So everybody won't be able to go to Brother Rudolph's house and ask him to help them. So prepare your house while you have time. So that's what I wanted to share, Brother Rudolph. Thank you for always being so generous with the time on the shows and sharing them with me and allowing me to be your co-host. May Allah bless you continuously and give me the strength, the health, the wisdom, the energy to continue to assist you in any way I can. I turn the show back over to our very capable host, Brother Rudolph T. Bond.
Well, thank you, Sister Michelle. Wow. Man, after all of that, I don't even know what to say behind that, because, man, that's something that I have to live up to now. And I can't, I'm just going to have to see if I can do what I can do. All right. So now what we're going to do is, like she said, if you go onto the Facebook page, she did post some of those pictures. And so those pictures are on there for you to see. The question is, what would you do if you were caught or a member of your family that mudslide? What would you do? Man, looking at the first picture, you see the crane, the caterpillar there, you see the other vehicle there, you see a couple of people. But, man, imagine knowing that someone is up under that and can't get to them. The other side to that is, imagine being up under that and still being alive. Get out, and they can't get to you. Woo! All right. So, family, you know the number. You know the call-in number. If you want to talk with us and join us in this dialogue, when you call in, just press the number 1. That's the way you raise your hand in this forum, in this classroom. Press the number 1, and then they will bring you in so you can talk live and ask whatever question you have. Again, I'm looking at this picture, and the one thing that I do not see, I'm trying to enlarge in the picture so I can really get a good look, because I don't see anyone there with signs. I don't see any protesters or anything, but I don't see anyone there with signs saying, I'm a Christian, I'm a Muslim, I'm a Buddhist, I'm a Muslim, I'm an elk, I'm a Mason, I'm a Greek, I'm an Alpha. I don't see anyone there that says Democrat, Republican, Tea Party, right-winger. I don't see any of that. I see no divisions there. All I see is a bunch of mud, a bunch of debris, a bunch of water, and devastation. And I say that to get you to understand that disasters do not discriminate. Sister, we have a caller on the line?
Let me refresh my screen. There are a lot of callers on the line, so let me see if anybody raised their hand. No, but I want to remind the listening audience that if they do have a question, please press 1 on your dial pad. And those of you in the chat room, you can type in your questions as Brother Rudolph is speaking, and we'll take your questions. Thank you. But no questions at this time, Brother Rudolph.
All right. Thank you so much, Queenie. All right. So let's go right on with the program here. Okay, so as my lovely co-host put out there, that yes, everybody is saying, I'm tired, sick of this snow, I'm sick of this snow, when is the snow going to stop, when is the snow going to melt? Okay, be careful what you ask for, because you might get it. Now, when all of that snow from all over the country, hell, from all over the world, when it melts, where is it going? It's only so much land, and it's only so much water on the planet Earth. That snow, when it melts, is going to increase the amount of water that is here on the planet, which is going to decrease the amount of land. And if it decreases the amount of land, that's going to decrease the amount of space that you and I as humans have to cohabitate and to inhabit. And that becomes a disaster for us. Okay? But we're not going to dwell on that. We're going to go and talk about some more things. Because I was of March and talking about the different disasters that went on during the month of March. Well, disasters and science in the month of March. So, you know, you have the Washington State mudslides, as we said, which was March 22nd in Oso, Washington, which killed at least 27 people to this date, all right, with at least 176 people still missing. And as she said, yes, the rescue dogs had to get a day off so that they could rest up, so that they could regain the scent and continue doing what they're doing. All right, so that's one. All right, officials also confirmed that a 1.1 magnitude earthquake occurred right behind the mudslide area on March 10th. 21 people, okay, are still unaccounted for as the recovery efforts continue to this day. The rescue efforts have been difficult, of course, due to the severe weather and the rain in the mudslide area. All right? So that's something there that we have to look out, and our hearts goes out to them, and our prayers are with the families, because loss of life is loss of life. And there's no denomination on that, and nobody has exclusivity on the pain and suffering that goes from losing a loved one. All right. So now, is someone coming in? Okay. All right. Now what we have is invasive fungal infections after natural disasters. Okay, Medscape LLC is pleased to provide online continuing medical education for an article, but what it's dealing with is the devastation that comes after the natural disaster. The psychological effect on the responders the psychological aspect on the victims and their families far surpasses the physical damage to property, because you can always rebuild the house. You can rebuild the bridge. You can fix the road. How do you fix the life or that circle that now has the missing members in it? So psychological first aid is always necessary. Analyzation of people and the thought process is always necessary after disasters have happened. So this is also something that we need to keep in mind. Also, so what we can look at is 21 communities in the Alps, maritime. We're talking maritime cities now, or areas, have been officially recognized as victims of natural disasters, mostly floods and landslides that occurred from Christmas of last year up until this current time. A lot of us didn't hear anything about that, but this is something, again, that's an ongoing phenomenon because of the change in the environment, the change in the weather, and the domino effect that this has on society. Because remember, again, those of us that live in very metropolitan areas like New York, Chicago, Detroit, Indianapolis, Los Angeles, you know, we're used to the city life and what goes on here, but and we lose sight of the fact that in other places in the world, there are still people that are living in their communities that look nothing like these. You have people who have communities all along waterfronts where their houses are on stilts. You have people that live on islands that are completely surrounded by water. You have people that live in mountain ranges that are have made their homes in the sides of actual mountains. And all of these different environments are being affected by climatical changes in the environment, and so all of these people we need to keep in mind, because all of these situations are disasters that have happened or disasters that are waiting to happen. Disaster relief call-out is an online news that I get on a regular that keeps me up to date with what is going on all over the world. But more so than that, there's another web source that I have that gives me minute-to-minute updates on disasters as they happen anywhere in the world. For instance, today is April the 1st, April Fool's Day, yes. But now dealing with natural disasters as they have been happening, let's look at earthquakes. In North America alone, 11-16, you had a 2.2 in Canada, in British Columbia, in the area of Princeton. You had a 2.7. in the United States, in Alaska, around a town named K-W-E-N-T-N-A. I won't even begin to try and pronounce that. That area also suffered a 2.2 earthquake, also in Alaska. Then there was a 2.0 in Alaska near Anchor Point. There was a 3.0 in California in Ferndale, a 2.7 in Alaska, a 2.2 and another 2.0 in Alaska. There was a 2.0 in Nevada in Kingston. In Hawaii, there was a 2.4, a 2.9, a 2.0, and a 2.3. And all of this also brought volcanic activity with it. Now, I know, some of you that are listening are saying, Brother Rudolph, what the heck does that have to do with me, where I am? It may not have anything to do with you, where you are, but there may be other people that are listening where this is. So let's deal with the whole and not just the few. In Oklahoma, near Meridian, there was a 3.2 that is going on as we speak. And then lastly, in Wyoming, Mammoth, Wyoming, there was a 3.1. So again, family, these are things that are going on as we speak, and people are dealing with them. Now, if we go to our NOAA, N-O-A-A, if you have your NOAA radio and have it on, you will hear a lot of activity dealing with high winds, wind warnings, and wind watches. Then you will also hear activity for hailstorms, because again, as the seasons change, remember, we're coming out of the winter season going into what's supposed to be spring, but with that brings atmospheric pressure and atmospheric air redirected, and it's going to cause another phenomenon for us that are in certain regions on the planet. So, you know, you have your tornado season coming, you have your hurricane season coming, you have the tsunami season coming, depending on where you live at. So again, we urge, we encourage, we implore you to seek out information in the regions that you live in so that you can know what hazards sit in those regions and what your vulnerabilities are so that you can prepare or begin to prepare for them. Again, family, you know the number. When you call in, if you press the number 1, then you know that you will be able to speak to us live and direct. I want to take this one. We're going to talk about flooding in a few, because, again, that is the hazard that most of us are going to be susceptible to in the days to come. But I wanted to take this time to read something from The Fall of America, chapter 36, page 157. To be plagued with too much rain will destroy property and lives. It swells the rivers and creeks. Too much rain floods cities and towns. Large bodies of water at the ocean shorelines will be made to swell with unusually high waves, dumping billions of tons of water over the now seashore lines. Rain destroys property and kills cattle by drowning them in lowlands. Yes? Is there someone on the line?
No, I think that's Sister Lachelle's background.
Oh, okay. Wade destroys the hiding places of vicious beasts and reptiles, bringing them out in small towns, in people's homes and farms. Rain weakens and destroys railroads, truck lines, beds and bridges. Rain undermines foundations of all types of buildings. Rain makes the atmosphere too heavy with moisture, causing sickness. Wind with rain can bring destruction to towns and cities, bringing various germs, causing sickness to people. It produces unclean water by the swelling of streams and destroying reservoirs of pure drinking water used for the health of the people. Rain is a destructive army within itself. Hailstones are also a property and life destroyer. So, family, I just wanted to throw that again. That was from The Fall of America, chapter 36, page 157, The Four Great Judgments of America. So, again, as the climate changes, the weather changes, we are coming out of the snowy season, but we're going into the rainy season. And, again, flash floods, flood warnings, as I said, rivers, lakes, and streams overflowing, busting at the seams because there's so much water. And then we have to deal with what comes from that, aside from you and I just getting flooded out. But the reptiles and the various animals who are chased out of their home because of it, and now they're forced into a confrontation with us. Everyone's looking for food, everyone's looking for shelter, and it's survival of the fittest. Ooh, that's not a good picture. I know. I'm creating that is very bleak and dismal, hence my name, Dr. Doom, is being further edified. But that's not my intention, family, but before we can give solutions to the problem, we have to make sure that you understand that there is a problem. A couple of websites, family, that you can go to and that you can use in your to try and help yourself and your family. One of them, in particular, is readyforanything.org. Readyforanything.org is the website of IPN, the International Preparedness Network. That's our brother, Aton Edwards, and the group that works with him, working to educate, to train, and to assist people to become self-reliant is to adapt and to overcome. So go onto that website, and you can benefit from what they have done and what they are doing with the Ready Up campaign. Ready Up is a slogan that we use to get people to understand the time and what must be done. You must get ready, and you must get ready now, because, again, tomorrow is not promised to anyone. And if you go on the website, you will see, as soon as it comes on, Reverend Darren Ferguson, pastor of the Mount Carmel Baptist Church, and he joined the Ready Up America efforts. Now, his church was in the Far Rockaway section of Queens, which is in New York City, and they were devastated by Hurricane Sandy. And they have some actual real-time photos of the destruction to the church and the cleanup efforts that went on, along, of course, with the story. And if you get a chance, you should read that. And then, of course, King Simon and his ready-up efforts. He's on a tour going around speaking, bringing disaster preparedness seminars and workshops to the people. See, I'm not the only one, and this is why when we talk, I try to constantly remain humble, because this that I'm attempting to do is something that I was introduced to by people who were already doing it when I met them. And they're still doing it. So, again, I'm not the only one that's doing it. There are others out here that's doing it. And whatever area you happen to be in, you need to find those individuals there that are doing this type of work, and you need to align yourself with them so that you can, one, be taught and trained on what to do. Two, you can have the knowledge that it's going to be needed in order to do what you need to do to save yourself and your family, and that you can also help to save lives of not just yourself, but your family. So
Brother
this
Rudolph,
is what you, yes, ma'am?
I just wanted to make sure that I chime in, because I know you won't say it. So I'll say it. You can also have Brother Rudolph come in to wherever you are. And he will come in, teach the course. He can certify you in just about everything you would need to be certified in. If you so desire a certification, he is internationally certified to certify in just about everything you would need to be certified in during an emergency, whether it be health care or disaster. So you can contact us at Care Unit Detroit, 911@live.com, and you can get Brother Rudolph himself to come to you and train you and your organization. So I know he won't say it, so I'm going to say it for him. He would love to come and teach you.
And Brother Rudolph, you do have some questions in the chat room, so whenever you're ready.
Oh, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Okay, yes, sir. We have a question from Cherie, and we have a new influx of callers, too. So let me remind the listening audience, those of you who are just now calling in, if you have a question or comment for Brother Rudolph, please press 1 on your dial pad. And those of you in the chat room, please continue to type in your questions. Cherie wants to know, do you get warnings about mudslides, and what areas are more prone to have mudslides?
Okay, let me answer the second part to that first. The areas that are most prone to have mudslides are those areas that are near mountains, on the sides of mountains, in low-lying valleys, up under mountains, anywhere that you have a lot of dirt that is going to be moist or wet by the precipitation, the rain, or the melting snow, that's where you're going to have a mudslide. As for warnings for mudslides, no. Unfortunately, mudslides are like flash floods. You know that they're coming when they get there. Now, what you can think about is, where do I live at? Do I live in this particular type area? Has there been a lot of rain or a lot of moisture lately in this area? Is the snow melting on that mountain? Do I live near a mountainous region or in a low-lying valley? Those are the questions that you need to ask. Okay. That's it for that.
Okay, yes, sir. And we have a question from Ty. Ty wants to know, what do you consider a safe place, or where is there less inclement weather?
Every planet you can find that there's life on outside of Earth. That was just a little humor. That was not sarcasm. On this planet, let me say it this way. I really don't have an answer for that question, because if you find a place that is not germane to snow, it's going to be susceptible to rain. If you find a place that's not germane to rain, it's going to be susceptible to drought. If you find a place that's not susceptible to rain, snow, or drought, it's going to be susceptible to something. So, as the scripture says, where can you go? Well, I'm paraphrasing. Where can you flee to that God can't touch you? And the answer is nowhere. So whatever area you're in, you have to do your due diligence and research the areas that you currently reside in to see what the hazards are for that particular area. Then you have to make a decision as to whether or not you feel that that's something you can deal with or not. And if not, then you have to start doing your research for other regions throughout the country where there's less of a hazard that you feel that you cannot deal with. And that's the best way I can answer that question.
Brother Rudolph, as you were talking, I was thinking about my friends who called me just a couple of months ago to ask me how to drive in snow because they lived in Atlanta. Like, you can't call it right now. God is so in control. He got it snowing in the south. He got heat waves in the north. I mean, you just absolutely cannot call it. I love how you said, I don't know what planet, because we can't say. I mean, it's snowing, hailing in strange places. You know, I have family members saying they couldn't get coats in the south because they don't have coats for snow. Say, can you send us a coat? I mean, you can't call it right now. I remember just a couple years ago, we had an earthquake in Detroit. Downtown Detroit had an earthquake. So, and this is not supposed to be, quote-unquote, an earthquake alley, but it happened. We've had tornadoes. They're not supposed to happen in the Midwest, not like that. So you can't even say, you know, where is safe, because a lot of times it's upside down in the blink of an eye. I mean, all we can do is pray and try to prepare.
That is so 1,000% on point. So I hope that the caller or the person that sent that question, I pray that they accept that answer with love, because everything that we do is out of love for our people. Even if we make a joke about it, family, understand we are responders. And part of the kooky responder mentality is we joke a lot. And we make jokes to offset the seriousness of what we deal with on a day-to-day basis so that we can deflect a lot of the emotion involved, that we can continue to do our job. So I just don't think we're making jokes about you or laughing at you. It's just our way of deflecting energy and emotion that we can stay on point and on task. Okay, Queen, we have more questions?
Yes, you have a question from John. John wants to know, how do you stop a bleed from an artery?
Oh, excellent question, John. The way you stop bleeding is, one, direct pressure. You want to take your hand, preferably with something clean in it, and place it directly over whatever it is that's bleeding and apply pressure. If that gets soaked with blood, you want to add more to it. You never want to take it off to look at it. You want to keep adding to it. Here's a rule of thumb. If you're watching the blood spurt out in a rhythmic spurting, that means every time the heart pumps, that blood is coming out. Yes, it's coming from an artery. If it's bright red and it's going clear across the room, yes, it's coming from an artery, and it needs to be contained quickly in order to save that person's life. If it's an adult that we're talking about, loss of 20% of their blood volume can send them into shock. Loss of more than 20% of their blood volume can send them into irreversible shock and death. And just so you can understand what we're talking about, the average adult has about 2 liters worth of blood in their system. Now, we talk about, you know, the average 125, 150-pound person. 2 liter sodas, that's about the average amount of blood that's floating around their system. Now, loss of 20% of that can cause them to go into shock. So it doesn't take very much. So, again, in dealing with direct pressure, and then after direct pressure, if that doesn't work, and again, it's an artery that you're talking about, if it's on an extremity, you may have to go to what's called a tourniquet in order to completely stop that bleeding from that area. But now realize when you place a tourniquet on a person, you have just made the decision that that person is going to lose that limb. But again, if it's the choice of losing the limb and saving the life, then you have to make a decision, and you're going to have to live with the decision you made. Wherever you are, find a first aid class and take it, because they can go more in depth on bleeding control and hemorrhage control. Sister Michelle, you have anything else on that?
Yes, sir. I was going to say, I mean, you must be a mind reader, or maybe it's because we work together a lot. I was going to make the point about the loss of the limb, which is why it is much better to do what Brother Rudolph said to begin with and apply that direct pressure on the side where you see the bleeding, because, you know, arteries generally run on two sides of the thing. So you have hope that if you don't tie the whole leg off, there might be enough blood flow in the veins on the other side that you might can save it. But when you do that tourniquet, you're wrapping it around the entire leg or arm. You know, a tourniquet is like you took an armband and then you put a stick in it and you twist it. So now all blood flow has ceased all the way around the rim, you know. So it's absolutely deadly. So I would definitely, to the limb, so I would definitely suggest what Brother Rudolph started off with, you know, applying that pressure and no peeking. Once you hold it down, you can never lift it up to peek. You just keep applying more pads on top. And it is very scary when you see that blood skirt out. I've had that experience with patients before, and it is kind of scary, even the healthcare professionals, because you don't want to touch somebody's blood product. because all kinds of pathogens, you know, all kinds of illness, virus, disease could be in their blood. So when it spurts out like that, even a healthcare worker, you know, is okay, I got to stop this blood flow, but you also want to protect yourself. So you may have on gloves or you may not if it's, if you don't have that opportunity to get some on. And I have interacted with patients and had blood products get on me. But by Allah's permission, you know, if you don't have any open sores, it's not that, it's not as easy to catch something as you might think, but it is something that could cross your mind. So if you think that you want to be that kind of person, a first responder, if you know that you're the kind of person, if you saw someone on the side of the road bleeding, get gloves and personal protection barrier devices and keep them in your car. Like I have a mouth barrier in my car. If I wanted to stop and do CPR and do mouth-to-mouth on someone, I have a one-way barrier. So if they vomited, it wouldn't come back into my mouth. I mean, so I have those barriers because I know if I see someone, I'm going to help. I'm going to stop. I'm going to get involved. So I keep those things in the car. I keep them on my person so I'm always prepared. So, you know, keep those kind of bandages. Keep 2x2s, 4x4s. You want to have the dressings. Keep those things on you because if you don't have your equipment on you, you're no good to anybody either. Oh, I got the perfect emergency bag in the closet in my bedroom. Not doing you any good at the side of the road. I mean, it's perfect. Got everything. Get up, water from Brother Rudolph. They got everything. And it's in the attic at my mama house from that time when I took the disaster preparedness class. You have to be willing to keep your stuff on you. So I have stuff on me in the car. I have a bag I keep at the mosque. I have a bag at my job. I leave things in places that I frequent so that I can get involved. So keep that in mind. Since you posed that question, it makes me to wonder if you're that type of person who would get involved. And all praise is due to Allah. If you save one life, it is like saving them all. So I commend you on your willingness to get involved, but definitely get more training and be prepared to keep some stuff on you. Because if you have that heart, you're going to get that opportunity. Back to you, Brother Rudolph.
Thank you so much. And what she said, I agree with 1,000%. And I will say as a lifetime responder, once you get bit by the first responder bug, it's all over. It's a wrap. You're never going to be the same. People, you just save your breath. And those sisters are getting mad at them. You're trying to go on a family outing, and there's an accident on the road, and they pull the car over, and those sisters get mad at them and cursing them out. That's who they are. That's what we do. We're going to do it. The best thing you can do is take a class so you can come, put your gloves on, and help me with it so we can get it done faster and then go where we were going. So,
and Brother Rudolph, can Sister Lachelle explain 2x2s and 4x4s? Because I don't want nobody to think she's talking about boards.
Yes, ma'am. Please. Michelle? Michelle, you still on? Okay. 2x2s and 4x4s are different size dressings or gauzes or absorbent sponges that we use in the medical field that go on wounds in order to help absorb the blood and stop the bleeding. For lay people, you would call it a bandage. It's not actually a bandage because a bandage holds a dressing in place. It's actually a dressing. It's that thing that goes directly on the wound before you put what the tape on it to hold it in place. So the 2x2s and the 4x4s are actual dressings or sponges or gauze pads.
Thank you, Brother Rudolph. And we have a question from Starlight God. He wants to know, do sandbags really help during a flood?
Yes, sandbags do really help, provided that you have enough of them and have them in place before the water starts. So, yes, they do really help. And it is a very efficient and economical way for you to make a dam or a barrier around you or your property if you're in a flood zone. You just go and get some plastic bags from Home Depot or wherever, some real sturdy plastic bags, heavy-duty plastic bags, and go get you some sand and start filling them up and then place them strategically wherever you know that the flooding will come from and however high you want to make it, and that's that it will be effective to a certain point unless Allah says otherwise and decides to just totally decimate the area.
Okay. And let me see if I can bring Sister Michelle back on. Okay, and Greg has a question. He says, is there a law that says people must be informed of dangerous weather in a reasonable amount of time?
No. No, there's no law that says that. What it says is that there are agencies out here who that's what they do. They try to inform the public of certain dangerous weather patterns and conditions. And there's certain legislation that they have been passed in certain townships saying that the township has the obligation of notifying the residents of, you know, X, Y, and Z. But again, that only works if it's something that you're going to get prior notice of. For instance, you can get prior notice of a hurricane, a tropical storm, a snowstorm or something like that by watching the weather stations and being in touch with them because they track storms and forecast. But for something like a flash flood, a mudslide, an earthquake, a tornado, things that just happen, there is no warning for them. So there's no way you can be notified of.
And I was also thinking of those things where sometimes the municipality will create things to ward off other things. Like, for example, in California, they'll create a fire to try to stop forest fires, and sometimes they'll get out of control, and now they create the disaster. They won't let you know in advance, you know, because they didn't intend for it to happen. There's sometimes when they reroute rivers or reroute flows of water, and then they don't expect it to get out of control. You know, nature is still nature, and sometimes, you know, for all the pre-planning, you can't control the way nature will go. So it still has its own freedom, you know, because Allah is in control of that. And, you know, I've seen times where I watch Doppler 7000, and they say it's going to snow all night, and we get up in the morning, there's no snow. I swear I should have went to weather school, because the weather person is the only person I know that can be wrong 70% of the time and get a raise. Well, it's because they can't know. They can forecast, they can predict, but there's always that factor that they can't predict, and that's God's hand in the thing.
Yes, ma'am. That is correct.
Yes, I am. Okay, we have one more question, Brother Rudolph.
Yes, ma'am.
Gladys says, my mother is going through some dental replacement and dental surgeries. I have tried dicing her food. I want to keep her from choking, so she refuses to eat pureed foods. What do I do in the event that she starts choking and gets some food that she cannot immediately cough up herself?
Then you're going to need to know the abdominal, the choking procedure, formerly known as the Heimlich maneuver. We don't call it that anymore. We call it the choking procedure. That's where you get behind the individual and you wrap your hands around them in their midsection, and you squeeze in and force that air back up through the windpipe to prayerfully push that object out or loosen it enough that it goes down. And you continue, if they're conscious, you continue doing it until the food comes out of their face, until they tell you, stop squeezing me, until you're so physically exhausted that you can't do it anymore, or until you're relieved by someone of equal or higher medical authority. If they go unconscious on you, you immediately lay them to the ground and then call 911 and then begin chest compressions in the center of their chest, just like doing CPR. But take a class on CPR and choking wherever you are, and that will help you to gain the confidence that you need, that you know what to do when it happens.
Okay.
Oh, I thought Sister Lachelle may want to comment further on that.
Thank you, Brother Rudolph. My concern would be that, you know, she said her mom was having dental work and that she was concerned about her choking. You know, the food doesn't have to be pureed. As long as it's what they call soft, it doesn't have to be all pureed. It's almost liquefied. I wouldn't want that either. I can understand that. But you could just do what they call a soft diet, and you can Google that. You can look, you can Yahoo that. You can search that of foods that are soft diet, that are not so soft that she would feel like you're giving her baby food, but are just less for choking. If she's concerned about choking, I would wonder if her mother has a weak gag reflex. I mean, it's just not that easy to be eating and choke on your food as you would think it is, but I would wonder if she has a weaker gag reflex because she's elderly. But try soft foods first and small portions. You know, you can choke because the portion size is just too big. So you could give her things that aren't pureed and take her dignity away and just give her smaller portions that she can handle, that she'll be less likely to choke. So I would suggest a soft diet but small portions so that she can handle it and keep her dignity, because that's probably why she won't eat the puree. She feels like it's baby food and you're stealing her dignity. So try smaller portions. That's what I would suggest for the Rudolph.
Thank you. And here's another idea for you. If you're feeding her, instead of having her extend her neck up and lift her head up to eat, have her put her head down, chin closer to her chest as you feed her, and she go to eat and swallow that way. And that may help to get the food to go down better and reduce the possibility of choking. If you talk to someone who deals with people who had a stroke and they have to do palliative care on them, they could give you little tricks of the trade to use in helping a person to eat that has that a problem with choking, especially for our elderly population. Okay, that's it for that.
Okay, thank you, Brother Rudolph. We do have another question from Lydia. She says, when I sit against something or press against something, I get dents in my legs. I heard this was from dehydration. Is that true?
Okay, let me say this. Remember, Brother Rudolph is not a doctor. Sister Lachelle is not a doctor. And we are not, or do not attempt to diagnose people on the phone. That's not what we're doing. We are merely giving you some of the benefit of our experience as healthcare providers and working in the medical field in order to help you, the listener, through a rough time. What I would suggest, if this is a reoccurring condition, that you go to a healthcare provider, your family practitioner, let them know what's going on and get properly checked out so that you can get a more conclusive diagnosis as to what it is. And I'll leave that at that. What I will say about dehydration is you have to remember dehydration will affect every cell of your body, every system in your body, and it will ill affect every reflex that you have, because when the body is dehydrated, you don't have the electrolyte balance that you're supposed to have, which means that the cells, the muscles, are not getting the nutrients it's supposed to get, so it's going to reduce reaction time, it's going to slow down reaction time, and it's going to cause a major problem with coordination because you are deficient in some of your electrolytes. Sister Lachelle?
Yeah, I want to definitely camel back your original comment that we are not doctors and we are not her doctor. She has to go see her doctor. And you covered everything I would say with regards to the indentation on her legs. But most importantly, you know, you have to find a doctor that you trust. Don't just go wherever your insurance sends you. And if you don't have insurance, just don't go to every free clinic. Go and interview the doctor and go and see if you feel comfortable enough with them, because you shouldn't be at home trying to Google your health care. Well, I got a pain in my left leg. That must be, no. You know, go and see someone that you trust and go interview them. You know, you have a right to interview them and say, you know, I like you, I don't like you, I'm comfortable with you, I'm not comfortable, and find someone you're comfortable with. Yeah, I do believe she does need to have that looked into. You know, don't blow it off. Go and have it looked into. But interview them. Don't just go wherever. Find somebody you're comfortable with so you'll tell them everything that's going on with you. Thank you, Brother Rudolph.
Okay, we got another question from Pamela. Pamela wants to know, is it true that you can only have 2 cesarean section births?
I'm sorry, is it true that you can only have 2 cesarean sections? Is that
no, I'm sorry. She said 2 cesarean births, like,
oh,
you know, C-section.
Oh, 2 cesarean births. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Sister Michelle, I'll let you answer that.
Well, I would like to first say it's not necessarily necessary to have 2. I mean, you can have 1 and then have another baby, as they would say, a natural birth or imaginal birth. I had a C-section, and then they told me I would always have to have C-sections because of the conditions I had when I would go into labor with dilation and the baby, you know, heart rate dropping. I had my second son, and I didn't have to have a C-section. And that doctor was the chief of the hospital, very smart man, very wise, and he was wrong, because we serve a true and living God. But you can have more than 2 cesarean sections, but it depends on that person. You know, I'm not your health care provider, and I don't know all of your medical conditions, but yes, it is possible to safely have more than 2 cesarean sections. But more importantly, it's possible to have 2 cesarean sections and still have a natural birth, or what they call a vaginal birth. So back to you, Brother Rudolph.
Well, because I am Brother Rudolph and not Sister Rudolph, I'm going to leave that one alone right there. Thank you so much, Sister Lachelle. It's such a blessing that Allah gives us what we need to assist us in our duties and our jobs as we go through this sojourn of life on this journey here. And it's such a blessing to know that you are incomplete with something and be able to find that which completes you. Praises be to Allah.
All right. I think Brother Rudolph bear witness now. Okay. Praises be to Allah. Okay. Leslie wants to know, Are there any natural remedies that you've heard of that can be used for asthma?
Natural, okay. I'm stuck right there on that term, natural. I'll say this about asthma being a lifelong asthma sufferer. There are times when my asthma may start up and I can't get to my pump right away, or I thought it was in my pocket and it's not, it's actually in my bag, or, you know, something of that nature. And again, I'm not telling you that, I'm telling you this is what Brother Rudolph has done. I have found that a cup of hot black coffee will do virtually the same thing for me that two puffs of my inhaler will do.
Yes, sir.
Now, there are scientific and medical reasons for it, but I don't know if you would call that natural or not, because we're talking about caffeine. And we're talking about coffee and whatever else is in the coffee. So that's why I said I was stuck when she asked for natural remedies. But let
and
me for say
the
this.
Rudolph,
I don't,
if you don't
yes,
mind, I just want to tell you, when I had asthma as a child, even though I don't have it anymore, when I would get an asthma attack at school, and you know how you can't have medications right there in the classroom, rather than have me walk down to the nurse's office, my teacher used to give me a Hershey's Kiss, and that same caffeine that is in that coffee is also in that chocolate.
In the chocolate,
and,
correct.
And it really, really helped. And, you know, but I wouldn't, you know, some people have more severe asthma than others, so.
Correct. Correct. And again, I don't know how much the person that asked the question knows about the disease of asthma. So let me just really quickly give a quick synopsis on it. Asthma is a medical condition that is categorized by a constriction of the bronchial tubes. Now, the bronchial are the two tubes that come from the where the windpipe bifurcates and starts going into the lungs. That means it branches off into the left side and the right side. Originally, it branches off and they are larger tubes, but then those larger tubes now get smaller before they go actually into the lung and connect to the alveoli or the air sacs. Well, it is those middle tubes, the bronchioles, that actually constrict and close off that cause the asthma attack. Those sections right there, the trick is to get those tubes to open back up. And so in doing so, the needle-dose inhalers that they prescribe for us asthmatics are bronchial dilators. That's what they're designed to do. That medication gets down into the lung, goes through there, and it causes those bronchial tubes to open back up. Well, what the different medications that are being used are working on different receptors in those tubes to cause that action to happen. But again, the small doses of caffeine cause the same reaction, but everybody's system is different. So, again, I would urge you to seek out a good pulmonologist and get a good test done of your lungs to know exactly what's going on with your lungs so that you can best understand how and why asthma is affecting you, and then you can know how and what you have to do to best treat yourself to not suffer fatally from it. Sister Lachelle?
Yes, sir. I also would suggest that sometimes your asthma can be triggered by food allergies.
Right.
So, you know, look and see what you're eating and watch yourself. And when you eat what, you know, you could be eating could also be affecting, you know, your asthma. And there are some other things that I won't go off into auditing and all of that, but there's some things that you can do to trace back your asthma and see why that's a condition with you. Some people have been exposed to or become sensitive in their bronchioles because someone smoked around them when they were little. And so you might have to be careful about being in those types of environments. But I would look at food and environmental triggers and to see about keeping yourself away from both of those as you look into natural ways to take care of your asthma. Look at what you're doing in your environment. You know, what are you eating? Where are you going? That's also triggering it. Brother Rudolph?
Thank you so much, Sister Lachelle.
Brother
Queen?
Rudolph, I'm going to break off now, Brother Rudolph, and leave it in your capable hands. I know that they are safe with you. And I'm going to be, of course, praying for you and listening in for the great success of the rest of the show. But at this point, I'm going to have to break off and tend to my other duties.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
I am super good, and the bat signal is up in the sky. So I'm going to have to break off, or the crescent and star is up in the sky. I'm going to have to break off. But may Allah bless you all for the rest of the show and its great success. And Brother Rudolph, I will talk to you later.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much, Sister Lachelle.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Okay, Brother Rudolph, this question is
all
yours. You know, I have an extensive background in the medical field too, but this one is all yours. sister wants to know, and I'm not going to say her name. She says that my husband is 34 and he is not circumcised. We argue about it being too late. Could you please tell us if it's too late or not? We are both here listening.
Okay. The answer is no, it's not too late. Yes, it can happen. At this point, I, as a man, will tell you it's going to be more psychological than physical now to that perspective, but no, it's not too late. It can happen.
Okay,
that,
Brother Rudolph, that's all the questions for now.
Okay. All right, then let us go to, let's deal with keeping in perspective with disaster preparedness, because that's what we're talking about here. I'm going to sound like a broken record every time I'm on the show, because I'm going to keep talking about the same thing over and over and over again, because I think it's necessary for us until we understand how serious this topic is. And until every one of us are in compliance with these things. So first thing is, let's talk about a family emergency plan. A family emergency plan, meaning if an emergency happens in your family, aside from jumping up and down, yelling and screaming, what plan do you have to deal with it? And who knows about the plan other than you? A family emergency plan is necessary because at the time of a crisis, no one is thinking clearly. And everyone is just reacting to what's going on. But if you have a plan already in place that has been rehearsed and practiced by members of the family, it will help move the family along
and get through that crisis better. You may not be with your family when disaster occurs. You need to plan how you will contact one another and practice what you will do in different situations. One of the most stressful things for a parent or a child is to not be able to contact each other when you're having a problem. You know how it is when you need to talk to somebody and you call their cell phone and it goes to voicemail, so you hang up and you call right back, goes to voicemail, and you call 15 times and it still goes to voicemail. How stressed out you get because you cannot reach them when you want to or need to reach them. Well, imagine if it's a major disaster that's going on and now this situation is going on, where your mind is racing to, and then the mind takes on a life of its own and starts throwing all kinds of scenarios at you. And next thing you know, the whole block is dead and the whole family is dead and nobody's alive. I'm the only one alive in the world, like that that scene from the Twilight Zone where a man comes out of his bunker and the whole world is in shambles and he's the last person alive. Well, that's what your brain has you thinking because you can't contact your family. Well, there are a couple of things that you can do about that. One, sit down with your entire family and go over some scenarios. What would we do if the children are at school, we're both at work, and something happens and the school says they have to let the children out and we can't get to the children, where are the children going to go? Do the children know where the safe place is to go that they can go, and where are they to go to meet up with us at an appointed place and time? Have we as a family discussed that? And if you haven't, now is as good a time as any. What you also may need to do is you may need to decide one or two out-of-state contacts and then let those out-of-state contacts know that in the event of an emergency, we are going to be contacting you to let you know who in the family is unaccounted for. Because in the event of a local emergency, it may be easier for you to contact someone that's out of state than someone that's local in state. So you want to think of one or two contacts, again, that are out of state, and you want to get their names, address, and phone number, and make sure their email addresses, everything, and make sure everybody in the family has it, and let them know that whenever there's an emergency, that's who is to be contacted. The second thing is everybody in the family should carry around with them an emergency card in their wallet, which will tell what their medical history is, what their allergies are, their date of birth, their first and last name, their emergency contact people or information, so that in the event something happens to them, if first responders get to them and go into their wallet or their pocket or their pocketbook, they can have personal information that can get to a next of kin. Everyone that has a cell phone, you should include in your contacts the word ICE, I-C-E. ICE is an acronym that to us as responders we look for because that lets us know who this person's emergency contact is. So if we scroll through your phone and find an ICE contact, we'll call them to let them know that so-and-so, whoever this is, or we just went through someone's phone, we got your number, and we don't know who this person is. They have no ID, but your contact information was in their phone. This person is at so-and-so hospital or going to so-and-so hospital. So, again, everybody that has a cell phone, you need to make an ICE contact in your phone and put somebody's number and name in there that in the event of an emergency, you would want notified that you are in an emergency. And also, in that ICE contact, in the notes under it, put who you are. Put your name so that when we contact them, we can tell them so-and-so was in an emergency and they're going such-and-such place. So I think that would be a good strategy for the families to come up with. And then also in your homes, at work, at your place of wherever you socialize or frequent most, it has a telephone there. There should be a card taped up either on the phone or on the wall by the phone that has the exact name of the location, the mailing address or street, complete street address, and the callback phone number written out. So in the event there is an emergency in that particular place, anybody can go right to the phone and pick up the phone and call for help. The local fire department, local police department, those numbers should be on that card also, as well as the poison control number, animal control number, and the local utilities office. Again, all of those type things will be able to help someone in the state of an emergency, help them get resources that they may need. Queen, do you have any questions or comments that you can add to that?
No, sir. I just want to encourage everybody to make sure that everybody in the family has that, including your children, because children, sometimes they may get lost, and we hope with the grace of Allah that they are found by someone who is safe. And I'm talking about very small children who are not necessarily able to verbalize who they are. And so sometimes if you're going to places like carnivals, big park picnics, amusement parks, or things of that nature, it's good to have something of that nature in their little pockets, because I never forget the horror we felt when my little niece was 2 years old and she got away from my sister in a big mall, and we couldn't find her. And one of the police officers suggested that, you know, in the case where a child is not verbal, that we at least have a cell phone number or something in their pocket or in their lapel or something like that in case the child became lost. And it's something I never thought about for safety reasons, but in the case of an emergency, I think it's a good idea, Brother Rudolph.
Yes, you're 100% right, sis. You're 110% right with that. And that's a scary feeling to lose a child in an environment like that, especially knowing all the sexual deviants and predators that are out here. That could be a disastrous situation for both the parent and the child. So, of course, the first thing is try and keep those small children within arm's distance of you. Second, the buddy system as we go out to places like that. Third, I know we have a amusement park called Six Flags here, which I hate, I've always hated it. I've never liked it. But I did take my children there twice in their life as they were growing up. They're grown now, but I remember twice in their life I took them. Once I took just the boys, and then the other time I took everybody. And I had it set up with them that every 30 minutes, we would meet at a certain place. But then I realized that the park was so big and that to try and meet every 30 minutes, they would never get anywhere. So then it came every hour, every 60 minutes, we met at the same place. And it was only for the purposes of a head count. Who's here? Who's not here? I was there. Everybody checked in. Okay, go where you're going. Remember, 1 hour from now, synchronize your watches. 1 hour from now, we meet here. We all had cell phones, and then we also had those family radios, those walkie-talkies. And so we had three different ways to contact each other. Now, of course, there's always that child who always gets lost. Always. You can set your watch by one of them is going to definitely not show up and check in and get lost. And my son did that one time, and he'll tell you he'll never do it again because for the rest of the day, he sat right there with me. The first time he did not show up in that hour, he became my shadow.
Yes, sir.
And although I got, you know, his mother cursed me out. Everybody in the family was yelling at me, telling me I destroyed him. Said, okay, say what you want, but he's back home, isn't he? He's safe, isn't he? That's all I was concerned about. Because, again, I was already a first responder at this time. I used to work at this amusement park as an EMT. So I knew very well the horror stories of the children every day that would disappear from this park.
Mm.
And so, and this is the main reason I do not like big crowds like that and places where people go, you know, that they find fun. It's a nightmare for me because I'm always thinking the other side.
Yes, sir.
You know, so, but it is what it is. That's who I am. That's what I do, and I will make no apologies for it, nor will I excuse my way out of it. You know.
Yes.
So, what I will say
we
is
have
this
a question,
family,
Brother Rudolph, if you
oh,
want
yes,
to take
ma'am.
It
let's,
now.
Yes, let's go to it.
Okay. Liam wants to know, is there a list of the foods that we should store in the event of emergency?
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. There's also a book that we can get to have with us before, during, and after an emergency. So since you're talking about foods, you want to get the book, How to Eat to Live. You want to
That's
get
right.
the book, How to Eat to Live. You want to get the book, How to Eat to Live, books 1 and 2. In that book, there's a listing of foods that we should store and that we should eat on a regular basis, and then there are those foods that we should not deal with for obvious some obvious reasons, some not so obvious reasons. But that's the where the list is. You can also find that list or a list of foods that can be stored. As a matter of fact, you know what? If you email us at Care Unit Detroit 911 at live.com, Care Unit Detroit 911 at live.com. If you send us an email, what I'll work on doing as soon as this show is over, I will work on
putting that together and getting it to Sister Lachelle so that she can post it on the website, on the CareUit website, so that you can have access to it. And that's for all the listeners. And that's what I was getting ready to say also about that emergency card. I'm going to have Sister post these things on the website so that you will have access to them. So that, and you can feel free to go ahead and download them and take them and utilize them. I don't know how that technology works. She does. That's why I'm telling you it's gonna take a minute. I have to get to her after the show. But look for it on the website within the next 48 hours.
Yes, sir. And we have a question from Don.
Sure.
Don wants to know, is it true that you are at risk for dying of cancer? Wait a minute. Because he's still typing. Hold on. Okay, you are at risk of dying of cancer after surgery rather than leaving the cancer alone. Oh, wow.
Okay.
Okay.
Let me say this way. Again, I am not any particular person's health care provider. When a person is diagnosed with a medical condition, you are now placed in the valley of decision. And the best thing that you can hope for is to have enough information about your condition that you can make an informed decision rather than a blind decision. When you are given a diagnosis of anything, immediately you should ask or seek a second opinion. If you don't like the second opinion, seek a third opinion. It's your right as a patient. Once you've sought out the necessary amount of opinions that you feel you have to get to conclusively agree that, hey, maybe this situation is going on, now you have to decide between yourself and your family how you are going to treat this situation. Because the worst diagnosis that you can be given, if gotten early enough, is treatable. The question is how. There are cases that people have been diagnosed with cancer, and the minute they've been diagnosed with cancer, they succumb to it. There are cases that people have been diagnosed with cancer and gone through treatment, and it goes into remission, and they're fine. There are cases to every end of the spectrum that you can go to, depending on how far out you seek to find that information. So again, the best thing that I can say to you as a healthcare provider first, as a brother second, and as someone that is concerned about life and health, is get knowledge. Knowledge will be the best deterrent. It will be the best medicine, and it will be the best aid to you as you are going through your crisis. Get as much knowledge as you can of the particular incident, and then, of all things, don't turn your back on your Creator. Ask your Creator for help and an answer. Prayer is one of the best medicines around.
Come on.
For those that choose to take it. It's like when we were growing up, Queen, didn't, I know I did religiously, twice a year, we got cleaned out. And we got cleaned out with castor oil.
Castor oil.
And cod liver oil.
Yes. Yes.
And we hated it. But
yes.
I can bear witness that as a child growing up, I did not really get sick.
We didn't get sick.
I got
sick.
The sniffles, you know, and stuff like that. But sick, sick, where I'm in the bed, can't go nowhere, to, I didn't get that because my mother kept us cleaned out. So I'll say
mm-hmm.
that where prayer is likening prayer unto castor oil. It may be a hard thing to swallow for some of us to understand that we have to turn to and rely on something or someone other than ourselves because we think we are the end-all, be-all at times.
Sure.
But if you can ever swallow that and then humble yourself to that which created you, because that which created you knows you, knows all about you, knows what you're going through, and knows what will cure you.
Come on.
So if you can manage to humble yourself and acquiesce to that, then there's a good chance you may get the answer to your question. If you cannot do that, then you're going to have a bumpy road. It's just that simple. Queen, I'm leaving space for you to chime in on that one.
Well, you know, I can just tell you, Brother Rudolph, that I am a strong believer in prayer, and I have lost many of my relatives to cancer. But I can tell you that one thing, first of all, death is inevitable. That's going
right.
to happen to all of us. But what my father used to tell me is that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
So we really have to be careful of what we're eating. But if it's at a point where there is a diagnosis of cancer, the best suggestion is that the earlier you are diagnosed, the more treatable you are.
Right.
If you toy around with, you know, natural remedies and things that are uncertain and the physicians are informing you of something that is certain, go with that and put your faith in Allah and go forward with the treatment. Being fearful and being reluctant is only going to make it worse because you have to strive to stay here for your families, for your loved ones, and for yourself. And there's a reason why Allah allows or permits for physicians to even exist. So utilize the physicians as best you can. And then the rest, just like in any situation, the rest is up to Allah. But you have to have faith. You have to maintain your health to the best of your ability and let Allah do the rest.
That
That's what I would say to that, Brother Rudolph.
So, thank you so much, Queen. That is so profoundly put. Again, we have to let's understand who we are and what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
We were all brought into existence knowing nothing. We were brought into existence from sperm and ovum, and then it makes a clot, and then it makes an embryo, then it makes a fetus, then it becomes an infant, and then if we're blessed with time, we grow from the stage of infancy through early childhood, adolescence, young adulthood, adulthood, and then into our golden years. And all through that period or that time frame, we are being carried and cared for by the
same energy, the same creator, the same God that brought us into existence. Make no mistake about it. We, in and of ourselves, can do nothing without the permissive will of the God that brought us into existence. We do nothing. So now because the God is who he is, he can never act other than what he is. And because God is too wise to make a mistake, and he's too omnipotent, omnipresent, and too righteous to be wrong, to be evil, then we have to readjust our way of thinking to understand or try to understand what is going on. So when you've been given a diagnosis of a medical condition, that is God talking to you. That's God coming through someone else, letting you know there's a problem with you in your body. That is the same God that brought you into existence is working in that individual who is is working to master the skills that or the talent that God has blessed them with, and they're bringing you help, or as the Quran says, a boon. So they are letting you know that there is a situation here, there is a condition, but just like there's a condition, there's an answer. The question is, how long will you dilly-dally around before you seek the answer? Because as with everything, answers to questions are in a matter of time. And an answer out of time is, I don't want to say that it's not answer, but as it says, truth out of season bears no fruit. Questions are relative to time. And so the answers are relative to time. As time progresses, the answers, they may not change, but the answers may take on a different meaning as more time passes. So, as Queen said, when you get that diagnosis, your job is to get hot on finding the information necessary to make you as knowledgeable of that diagnosis and condition as you possibly can, of what the treatment options are, and then you can make a proper decision on which way you're going to go with your treatment in order to try and preserve the life that Allah has given you. And I'll stop with that.
Yes, sir. Okay, excuse me. We have a question from G-Man. G-Man says, do you suggest critically ill people who are at home be sent to a hospital when notified of an oncoming disaster?
That's an excellent question. And I cannot answer that question with a straight yes or no as you may want. I have to answer it this way. The question is, where do you live? The proximity of that healthcare facility to your house. Is it feasible to transport that person to that facility? Do you have the time to do it? Is it a condition that can be cared for in the home or is it a condition that must be cared for in that particular facility? All of these are questions that have to be thought about and answered before you can make that before I could make that decision. So that's mm-hmm. the best way I can answer that question.
Yes, sir. And let me suggest, Brother Rudolph, that if you have someone who is bedridden at home, and you are in a flood zone or floodplain, or you just really don't know. More than likely, excuse me, if you take that person to a hospital, most hospitals are on standby for emergency patients.
Yes.
So when you have someone who is in that kind of critical care, then you need to have what they call an alternative placement for them. In other words, if you live in a flood zone and it's your mother and your mother is living with you, then maybe you have a sister who lives in higher ground or a brother who lives in higher ground, and they need to be prepared to receive mother and care for mother in the event that your area becomes inundated with water or inclement weather, to whereas, you know, you think that you may have to move around or, you know, relocate or evacuate, and you don't want to be caught in rushing waters with a person who is not ambulatory. So you will always need to have a plan B, or an alternative housing situation for people in that situation. And then if that is not feasible, you also, if you live in a flood area and you have a second floor in your home, you need to, when the weather is predicted that it's going to get that bad, you need to be prepared to move that person to a higher floor. And that's all I wanted to offer on that, Brother Bruno.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Thank you so much. That is 100% right and exact. Again, it goes back
and
to planning.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. We had one more question. okay. She said she wants to know, are there any natural remedies for tooth infections?
Natural remedies for tooth infections. I'm quite sure there are. I don't know what you mean by natural remedies for tooth infections. I'm not sure what you're asking. I know that grenade or nutmeg oil or clove oil works on gum pain. I know that, you know, if you have an infection and you need to get to the source of that infection, that antibiotics are needed in order to get to the root of that infection, only because when you're talking about a tooth, you are talking about a direct conduit to your heart. And gum disease is one of the leading causes of heart attacks. People with poor dental hygiene suffer from heart attacks simply because of proximity. You know where the mouth is, you know where the gums are. And the blood going from there is going directly back to your heart. And so if it's an infection there, where's it taking it? Directly to your heart. So I would simply say, again, there I'm quite sure there is. Cannot tell you exactly what it is at this point. I will put that on the refrigerator to research, and get back to you?
I have the answer to that one, Brother Rudolph.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much.
I want to tell you this. Last year, as a matter of fact, on March the 30th, I lost my nephew, 25 years old, to an abscess. Yes. He was 25, had an abscess on his tooth. The abscess burst.
Hmm.
He was home alone. It infected the bacteria that he had. Was a rare bacteria, but that bacteria in that tooth poisoned his system, and we don't know what amount of time. It wasn't until the next day that he was found, passed out, unconscious in his closet. When he was taken to the hospital, he had blood poisoning from that bacteria. And, you know, bacteria loves to grow in warm,
moist places.
So imagine what the bloodstream provides. At 98.6 degrees, bacteria can travel in your bloodstream extremely fast. My nephew suffered for 9 months fighting the blood poison, constantly on IVs, until his heart just gave out. So I want to tell you that if it's a such thing as an infection, if it's swelling, if it's red, if there's pus, there's severe pain, it would behoove you not to try to fix that at home, because you never know what degree or what kind of bacteria may be contained in that tooth. And you never know when that abscess is going to burst. The first thing a lot of people like to do is say, get some salt and warm water. Well, salt will burst the abscess. And if you're not dependent on the location of the abscess, if you cannot spit that out, you cannot regurgitate that, it goes into your bloodstream, just like everything else you swallow. And you can easily die from an infected tooth. So, and as Brother Rudolph said, people who have poor dental hygiene, you more than likely will end up with heart disease, because that bacteria gets in your bloodstream and poisons your bloodstream, whether it be fast or whether it be slow. It is a poison, and that's why dental care is so important. Even if you can't afford to go to the dentist, you can still maintain dental care with using baking soda on occasion, rinsing your mouth out with peroxide, but it's the other kind. It's not the external kind, but the kind that you can
digestible peroxide. Yes,
right.
Ma'am.
Rinse your mouth out with that. And
any sign
of any little cavity, you know, always keep your mouth clean, always floss. It's very, very important. Stay away from candies and sugars, especially when you know that you're prone to have a small cavity, until you can get that fixed. Toothaches are nothing to play with. They can kill you. So there's no natural remedy except for you to go to a natural dentist. And get that taken care of. And another thing, I want to say this about dentists. You know, it's all about a money thing. If you have a tooth that has a hole that you can stick the tip of your finger in, your pinky finger down in that tooth, and you go to the dentist and the dentist tells you, I can save it, you tell him to save the drum. Because that tooth will become infected over and over and over again. Because they're going to put an artificial substance within your mouth for a tooth that's too far gone, and it's all about getting you to come back and keep paying money and keep paying money when the tooth needs to be extracted, because they're trying to make it look good, but in, at the same time, it's so far gone. If it's down to the bone, you're risking your life just to save a tooth. So that's what I wanted to share with her about that, Brother Rudolph. And thank you.
Oh, no, thank you. This is why, this is exactly why it's so important that we have access to these airwaves, because all of us are filled with such a wealth of knowledge, and when we are in the proper spirit, we can parlay off of each other for the benefit of the whole. So all praise is due to Allah. I'm looking at the time, and unfortunately, it's time for us to go. I feel like I'm on the Mickey Mouse Club. Now it's time to say goodbye to all our family.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. We wasn't expecting that one, y'all.
I wasn't either. It just came out. Yes, I still need some auditing done. Yes, it's true.
And you know what?
Yes,
and I want to talk about everybody on the East Coast, all of you 347 area codes. Brother Rudolph, it's about 30 of them on here, and not one person asked the question. Not one person. So I'm just going to say that the East Coast, and I'm going to go ahead and say this, Muhammad Mouse number 7, A, B, C, D, E, F, and G, whoever it is. Y'all are so misrepresenting out there tonight.
Well, you know, I know what it is. No, I'll have to say that they're listening to me in one ear and probably watching the minister on the
Believers meeting. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Ma'am. Well, our times are available. They will be available 10 minutes after the broadcast. So share with any believers that you know who may have went to the believers meeting. Tell them to access the link, and they can hear Brother Rudolph all through the night or whenever they want to listen, because there was some very good information shared here, some life-saving information that we pray that you share with your community, most of all with your family, and that you do those things that Brother Rudolph instructed you to do, especially the emergency contact information, which is your ICE card, reviewing what you need to have in your go bag, and also the foods that you need to be stored. That information is going to become available to you. But go ahead and get the book, How to Eat to Live, because it's not good for an emergency situation, but it's just an excellent diet to keep you healthy and that will sustain you and make you strong when you are faced with these tragedies. And it will also teach you about fasting, because in the event that you have to parcel out food, you might have to be in a situation where you might need to have food for a week, but it's only food for 3 days. So how do we learn how to fast? These are things that we need to practice so that when those situations arise, they're not difficult for us. Because we as Muslims, we fast all the time. So if we could take 3 days worth of food and make it last 7 days if we have to, because we know how to fast. And so that, those are some vital things that you need to know, especially the areas that had a lot of ice and snow. So I'm going to be quiet now. And Brother Rudolph, if you want to close us out, this is your show. So I'm going to shut up.
Oh, no. Praise be to Allah. Thank you so much, Queen. I'll let Sister Lachelle know that I had an able-bodied co-host, even when she had to go. Praise be to Allah for the sister.
Oh, don't think I haven't been listening to all of this. I've been listening the whole time.
Yes, ma'am.
Sister Queen is like Ed McMahon. She laughed at all your jokes, Johnny Carson Muhammad.
Sister Lachelle, since you're on, would you like to say something just before we close out?
Yes.
The minister hasn't come on yet, so if you were trying to get to the mosque, you still have time to get there. But I just want us to always remember what time it is. You know, I don't think we take it seriously enough that we'll be the one on the news tomorrow. So if that's the only thing that you leave for me on your mind is tomorrow it will be you, not might be, it will be you or someone you love, so get prepared.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
And, yes, I'm going to close out with this, family. Again, we love you. Our endeavors is to try and help save your life and not to frighten, scare, or browbeat or downplay anything with you. We are your family, and we are here to help you. And may Allah bless you with a blessed week until we talk again. Thank you, Queen.
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum, family. One nation, one love. Good night.
Wa alaikum salam.